Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, and once again, I'm coming to you from a nice sultry day in Fort Worth, Texas. My guest today is the co-founder of a fitness and lifestyle company called Poised, Inc. She's a neuro-linguistic programming master practitioner. She's the leader of meditation and mindfulness programs for corporations, private groups, and individuals, both in Silicon Valley, where she, I believe, had a previous career, and throughout the U.S. And she's now the author of a brand new book entitled Breaking Up with Busy. We can all use this. Real life solutions for overscheduled women. But having read it myself, it works for overscheduled men as well. So I think it's aimed at women, but is apropos to men. So men don't need to be left out, right? So it's a joy to welcome Yvonne Talley to today's show. Welcome, Yvonne.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you, Paul.
Yeah, I had a little problem with the overshadowed women because I thought, well, why can't I enjoy this? And I think you can enjoy it equally, right? Or is it? It's tooled, I guess, specifically to women, isn't it, I guess?
Well, that's a wonderful perspective that you bring in, question. And men are busy, too. They're just not as busy as women. In fact, about 15% less. And there's some real concrete reasons why women are affected by our busy culture. And you're absolutely right. Men are overscheduled and busy as well. Busy has gone from being a pastime, something that we used to say, oh, I've got a busy afternoon, and now we just have a busy life. When we greet one another, it's typically the response that's very accepted and very common is, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy. And when
right.
we say that, something happens. We have this sense of connecting, a sense of belonging, and it also gives us that sense of importance. I'm busy, you're busy, you get me, I get you, we can move on from here, you know what I mean. So
right.
it's shifted. So yes, we're all affected by it, but women are much more affected by it for several reasons, and one of them, of course, is economic reasons and technology, which affects all of us, and then this disconnection we have from nature. So you're absolutely right. We're all affected by it, but women much more so.
Well, and unfortunately, we still live in a society where, you know, women are less appreciated than men. You know, even today, I think, you know, they earn less in some places. They are treated with less respect. We're seeing this whole Me Too movement, which is based on the idea of a differential, right, between men and women. So the men have more options than women do, and so yeah, it's important that we address that. But you're absolutely right. You know, I retired from church ministry 3 months ago, and every time people call me and say, "How's it going?" I've said, "I'm so busy." And you know, why I'm saying that is, you know, there's two kinds of retirement. There's there's the twiddling your fingers retirement, right, where you're playing video games or something all day, and there's nothing else going on. And then there's the type of retirement where, you know, it's a full life. You've got all your projects that you wanted to do before. So I mean it in that regard. You know, I'm busy with all the fun stuff. But it's interesting. We use that phrase, like you said, without really thinking. Like you say in the book, we used to say, I'm fine, you know, and then you move on from there. Now we say, I'm busy.
Yeah.
So, you were busy yourself, and in fact, you shared that in your introduction. And I don't want to mention it. And, you know, I want you to tell the story in your own words. But tell us what happened for you.
Yeah, I say often, you know, we say write about what you know, and certainly this was the inspiration, and it was that blessing in disguise that we always talk about and refer to so many times in our lives. And this was my blessing in disguise for sure, and that's the way I chose to look at it. But, you know, I was so busy helping people as a wellness consultant live a vibrant and healthy lifestyle, growing my business, raising my daughter as a single mom, that I missed my own signs of busy and overscheduled. You know, the fast pace, the sleepless nights, you know, there's almost this badge of honor. Oh, I only slept four hours last night, and here I am. And the cramped schedules, all of that landed me in the hospital emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack when, in fact, I was having a panic attack brought on by stress. And, Paul, what was so interesting, in just a blink of an eye, I remember having that feeling of, I was so embarrassed. I was ashamed. I thought, you are a fraud. Here you are. Mm. Organic eating, exercising, positive thinking, meditating, healthy individual. And here you are, you know, not being able to handle your own stress. So that really inspired me and encouraged me. I thought, you know, I've got to find solutions for myself. And what was ironic about it is I'd been spending over 20 years teaching my clients how to do this, but not applying them to my own lifestyle. So I took those solutions, developed more, went on to do my NLP training, my neuro-linguistic master practitioner training, and brought those techniques into the mix. So it's a combination of practical solutions that you can do in a short amount of time that will help you change unresourceful behavior and habits so that you learn to focus more on what you want to bring into your life, not what you're trying to avoid. And then the mindfulness end of it was very important for me to bring into it as well, because that's another attribute and another tool that we can use. And so there you have it. There's the book.
Yeah, it's very much a workbook, isn't it? It's very practical. It addresses issues head on and gives wonderful examples. You know, I like all the examples you give of OSW people, you know, overscheduled women, and all the excuses we make. Unfortunately, we're so involved in the doing of things, right? We say we're human beings, not just human doings. And our society encourages us to do, you know, to be so overscheduled that we never get a chance just to stop and do nothing. And I'm a big advocate of doing nothing, and that's counterintuitive sometimes, because people say, well, what a waste of time. You're not doing anything. You've got to be productive. I think even the spiritual path can become overprogrammed too, can't it? You know, like you said, always trying to do the right thing. You know, I got to fit in my meditation time, etc. Like, there's a famous quote from Gandhi. I don't know if it's apocryphal, but it makes sense. When he realized it was a busy, especially busy day, he would take 2 hours to meditate instead of one. And I love that, because, in other words, he needed more time to be still and quiet if it was going to be, you know, hectic. And usually we do the opposite. When we got a busy day, oh, well, I haven't got time to meditate. So, you know, we have to remember there's a whole new world, isn't there, the other side of overscheduled.
Yes, and those are all, again, really great points, and it's so important. And that is one of the things that I hear first, Paul, is that I'm always asked the question, what's your number one tip for somebody? And I always say, slow down. And it's so, as you said, so counterintuitive, but I mean in the most practical sense, and I'll give them examples. Slow down the way you talk. I have a tendency to talk really fast. I find when I slow down, I have a sense of calm, and the conversation shifts. Slow down the way you walk. Slow down the way that you drive. And what happens when we do that is we start to set a different tone. People start to listen. We start to hear more effectively. And you mentioned something about doing nothing. I find that really interesting, because that is always something that someone says, I feel so guilty if I do nothing. when I'll suggest to them, step out into nature, just look up at the sky, take a deep breath in, and they'll say, I don't have time to do that kind of stuff. That's so frivolous. Well, guess what happens when we take a deep breath in? We stimulate that vagus nerve within us, which triggers within our nervous system, slows our heart rate, lowers our blood pressure, and decreases our cortisol. And all of those things are amplified when we're stressed and rushing. So when we walk out into nature, we take a deep breath, and we just be, and we're just mindful on that breath for 1 minute, we're doing something. We are taking care of our body and our mind, and I would dare to say our spirit as well.
Right. And this slowing down has nothing to do with medications, right? We're not breaking up with busy through Quaaludes or anything. It's not that kind of slowing down.
This is
more healthy than that, right?
Yeah.
Of course. I'm being facetious.
Exactly.
Your book starts with confessions, you know, eating meals on the go. I mean, I think we're all caught up in that sometimes, you know, standing up to eat, not taking the time. You referenced somebody that ate a Jenny Craig meal in a car, you know, thought it out on the dashboard and then ate it. That's pretty bad.
And then being
a room parent, I think you went through that one, didn't you?
Yes, that was her strategy of how she was going to fit in. And I remember the day she told me that, and she was 100% serious. And I asked her to repeat it just to make sure that I had heard it clearly. And that got me to thinking, you know, this is not the point. The point of, you know, we can't possibly, for some of us, our lifestyles are such that we do have to sometimes eat at the desk. And we are on the go, and we're going to grab things. That's part of life. But when it becomes that overriding habit of standing up and eating on the go, and I deal with a lot of people that are trying to maintain their weight and also lose weight for healthy living, and I'll ask them, well, what did you eat yesterday, just as a reference, and they can't remember because we're not having the experience of nurturing our body through food because we are doing other things and we're distracted. So it's, and also our digestive system doesn't work as well. So these are all little things that once we become aware of them, once awareness arrives, it's hard to undo that. It's hard to ignore it. It can't be undone. So once we're aware of some of these small things, we can start to make these shifts. And that's really what I wanted to bring across in the book, is it's not this broad, sweeping amount of changes. One small shift, thinking the way, you know, changing or shifting the way we're thinking or looking at something and the way that we're doing something can help us move towards what we want to bring into our life, what we want to create. And that's really the focus, is really let's shift that attention and awareness to what we want to bring into our life rather than always worrying about what we've got to do, what we can't get done, what happened, what if that person does this, what if that person does that. Because if we are always paying attention to that worry and frustration, we're just going to create more of it. Like Gandhi, he took 2 hours on a busy day to meditate because he knew that was what's going to create the space for him to be able to be in that space to do and be what he needed to be.
Right. And as we teach in Unity, you know, it's an inside job, right? We are so out-oriented. Even when we're on a path where we feel we're motivated and mindful, we're still looking at it from an external viewpoint. You know, I'm mindful so I can be more productive or whatever, instead of becoming to the heart of ourselves and finding that inner peace and spaciousness that gives us all the time of the world. Interesting about time, isn't it, that it definitely can shift and expand or contract depending on our viewpoint. You know, we sometimes will say it flew by or whatever, and then another time it seems to go on forever. You know, just an hour seems like an eternity. So we know it's variable depending on our mindset. Some people have never got enough time. Other people have got all the time in the world, so to speak. Well, what's happened? You know, it's not time, is it? It's our approach to the way we live our lives. You know, it used to take me days to write a sermon, you know, and now I hardly write one. I just, I'm thinking about it all week, but I end up writing notes kind of directly from spirit and go from there. And it's not that I don't put in the same amount of work, perhaps, but I do it in a totally different way. Before, I was really using my intellect to, you know, to do it, and now I allow spirit more, the intuitive, to come forward, and that works in a timeless way, and I find I get much more done in a shorter period of time. And it's probably more valuable and more profound than all the sweat that I put in. So it's interesting how you can shift, you know, the way you do things when you realize you're not limited. You know that you don't have to buy into these systems, because I think that's part of it, where we feel we have to be part of this overscheduled life, don't we? We buy into the framework of it, the mindset, as you call it.
Yeah, and I think that the buy-in is more of a kind of almost, it's just right there. Technology has so much to do with this, too. I live in the heart of the Silicon Valley, so I've got Facebook down the street and Google around the corner, so to speak,
right.
Literally. And so technology has driven a lot of this busy culture, and I think it's important for us to recognize that, because it does have an addictive quality, and it's really important that we pay attention to that and have some boundaries around that. You had mentioned something about, you know, now it takes you so much less time to write your sermons and to your speeches and presentations because you're speaking, as you said, being moved by spirit from within. And I think that's so important for us to remember, is to allow ourselves. That's, you know, when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and we put ourselves into that position to trust. And I believe that that is why spirit is so incredibly important, because we know someone always has our back, so to speak. We're part of a bigger picture. So when we can let go of that fear, drop that fear, and drop that self-judgment, we're more likely to deliver and be in our life from center, from heart, from spirit. And people respond to that. We impact others in a vast way when we can show up from that perspective, show up from that place, and not always from being that, in that performance space. I've got to get this done. I've got to do it just right, and then I've got to do it again. I've got to rise above. I've got lots of competition constantly coming at me, a barrage of competition always coming, and comparisons through technology always coming at me. So I've got to rise above. But if we slow down enough and tap into, and I call this creating astounding change in one's life, if we tap into what our personal attributes are, what are those gifts, what are those things that help us to not only lose track of time, and that's how we know we're living in our passion and our purpose, we're in that flow. What are those things? Let's take a moment to refresh our memory on thinking back about all the moments and memories that have filled us with pleasure and joy. And when we come into that space, we then, that moves from the inside out and beyond, and we connect with people in a completely different way. And when we're busy, when we're distracted, what happens to our intimate relationships? They suffer as well. We teach our children how to be busy and distracted. So it's really important that we take that step back, connect with that center, that spirit, what really moves us when we are in the flow, when we lose track of time. And then we can live more in that love. We can leap with faith, and we can take into our life much more richness and share that.
Right. Who wouldn't want to do all those wonderful things you describe? You know, you got an interesting chapter on traps that we fall into, you know, the OSW traps, as you call them. And I guess they're based on different character types. You know, each one of us is, or personality types, I should say. You've got one called the being all trap. And then you've got the allure of it, the setting the trap, and the breakout solution. So, again, very, very practical advice here, folks, if you're listening to the show and would like to get the book. I'm sure you'd fit into one or several of these traps, because I think we're all competent of various aspects of these things. But yeah, being all things to all people, right? I got to be the best me always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
then I'll be loved and accepted.
Exactly. Exactly. And we all want to be accepted, and we all want to be part of the group, and we all want to have that sense of happiness and joy. And again, I'm going to go back to this what I call the comparison game. with social media so much in and a part of our lives, and just think about our millennial generation and the generations coming up from behind them, this is something that they have to struggle with and deal with day in, day out, this constant comparison. And we all know that it's not real. It's the filters and the shadowing and all the great things that makes a photograph look as though that person's life is fantastic, but we still buy into it. So this being all has become very much a comparison game. And it's that need for reassurance, that affirmation and acknowledgement that we're valued and appreciated. And if there's one thing as human beings that we share, well, actually there's two. We all want to be appreciated, and we all want to be happy. And that is something that we're all striving to bring more of in our lives. But as you said earlier, Paul, so much of that is we keep looking out for those things that are going to fuel us up, and we have to pull back and look in. We got to slow down, be mindful about what our needs and our wants are, and what are the intangibles that are missing from our life that's due to the busyness, and lighten up on ourselves, really. Like, give ourselves a break.
Yeah, exactly. That's huge, isn't it? You know, if you say slow down is important, I think give yourself a break is important too, because we're our own worst taskmasters and enemies so often. One of the traps is saying yes all the time. You know, there's power to no, isn't there? Yeah, Jesus said, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. You know, don't worry about anything else. But he did say there were those two tools. You know, you can say yes to life, but sometimes you can say no to whatever is not serving you anymore. And we're afraid to say no. You know, I know some people are afraid ever to say no to their children. But what a disservice, I think, because healthy boundaries are so important, aren't they, if you're going to live a happy and effective life. It's not limiting a child, for instance, or limiting ourselves. It's creating a greater sense of a spaciousness, because we're no longer so scattered, you know, saying yes to everything under the sun. So, again, counterintuitive, right?
Mm-hmm. And someone once said, if everything is important, then nothing is important.
Yeah,
and again, this
good
idea of saying yes to everything, again, that inclusion, we want to be a part, we want to get ahead, we don't want to miss out, that fear of missing out constantly, and that's that comparison game again coming back in. But that healthy no is really important. That is definitely something that when we talk about men and women, women are more likely to say yes because we have that role of the pleaser. And this is a broad brush I'm painting with right now, as
right.
the nurturer, as the one that will keep the generations together and move them forward. And where men are much more likely to be comfortable with a no, they don't have the emotional charge to it, and they are also exposed to it much earlier on. When we think about women and in our culture, and certainly as you touched on earlier in our conversation, across the world, really, we're very fortunate to be in a culture where we have that opportunity and the ability to make those distinctions and choices between our no's and our yeses. But women typically, you know, we get that message early on, be nice, smile, don't make waves. And so this idea of saying no becomes a negative connotation rather than a way of setting your boundaries. Because
right.
I would say boundaries are like handrails on a staircase. Everyone feels better when they're there. And if we're always saying yes to our kids, they get to be about 15, 16, and they don't even trust, even before that, they don't even trust their own decision-making process because they haven't been able to be in the driver's seat to say no to something or to say yes to something and then have those consequences, those real-life consequences. And the confidence to be able to go from a situation where they didn't, quote, win, they weren't number one, and move through that and get on the other side of that and know that they can try again with different results. So it's really important, this whole idea of saying no and yes and when to choose them and when to express them and how to express them if you're uncomfortable with it. But to build, it's a practice. We have to build our practice in being able to set those boundaries, because that's really what it comes down to.
Well, the unfortunate thing is, you know, women who are strong, quote, strong, are often labeled, quote, bitch, you know, that they're difficult or whatever. Whereas we wouldn't label a man that way. We'd admire a man for his strength and fortitude, you know, whatever, his can-do attitude. So, you know, my wife, for instance, is a example of this, because she's a strong woman, I would say, and she's a builder and a remodeler, you know, and so she's in that field where she deals with a lot of men, and you know, how to maintain being a woman, you know, a feminine woman, but also being strong, right? So it's an interesting balance there, and I think after a while she earns the men's respect because she has expertise. But, you know, she doesn't want to just dumb down her womanhood either. You know, she wants to be a woman and yet be respected as a professional woman in a field full of men, usually. So, again, I like to see when stereotypes are broken, right, so we can move into a different paradigm, that we don't always have to have women a certain way or men a certain way. You know, that there's all kinds of flexibility here in how we show up in life.
Absolutely, and I think you touched on a good point, and that is we're still trying to find our way because things have shifted so dramatically. You know, we 2/3 of the women in the workforce have school-age children, so they've got to be out there. They've got to be aggressive. They've got to be strong. They've got to have solutions, and they're doing it typically by themselves, and we still take on 80% of what's called non-paid work. So we're not only in the work field, the professional work field, we're also caring for the domestic life. So we've got a lot on our plate, and as an average, we're making 20 cents less on the dollar. If you're a woman of color, that drops down to almost 40 cents. So you can see there's some real economics here, and I think what women are starting to now realize, or certainly getting more comfortable. I know as a single woman, I'm certainly much more comfortable with this now at this point in my life, that we can be strong and soft, that we can be gentle and assertive, that confidence and self-esteem and that trust to make the right decisions is all there within us. And it is okay to make waves. Not everyone has to like us. And I think that's a page from Men's Playbook that we can really, you know, tape on our forehead and keep continually reminding ourselves that that is absolutely okay. Lead with kindness, lead with an open heart, lead with confidence and strength, and it's okay if they do not like you.
All right, wonderful words. We're at the break. That's a wonderful way to end our first segment. I'm with Yvonne Talley. We're talking about breaking up with busy. Join us in a couple of minutes.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
If you've been inspired by the programming on Unity Online Radio, we hope you will give your support so others may be inspired too. This online radio network depends on the support of listeners like you to continue operating and expand its outreach. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's Eric Butterworth with a Unity Mindful Moment.
Unfortunately, religions have tended to present themselves as institutions instead of perceptions, something you join instead of a transcendence that you experience. We've tended to believe that God works exclusively through the machinery of an institution. So it is self-evident that most persons believe that you go to church to get close to God. The fact is, if God is present in the church, God is also present in the theater. God is present, period, because God is an omnipresence, everywhere present. So you don't go to church to get close to God. But you go to church, perhaps, hopefully, to be challenged to dig within yourself and to find that consciousness of the presence that is with you wherever you go. So that wherever you go, wherever you are, God is.
To pick up the Eric Butterworth book, Practical Metaphysics, go to unity.org and click on Shop.
What if you could start each day with a positive outlook, remembering you are a divine expression of God? Daily Word is a booklet of daily devotionals offering positivity that's downright contagious. With a print subscription or by email, you can pause to reflect on how to practice spirituality in your human experience. Reading Daily Word takes about a minute a day, so you can feel uplifted every morning. Visit dailyword.com to subscribe.
Would you like to experience more peace and joy in your life through A Course in Miracles? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley support you in discovering the powerful life lessons available through this unique spiritual thought system that teaches the way to love and peace is through forgiveness. Join Jennifer every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, to experience the healing for yourself on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment. The ancient Chinese philosopher known as Lao Tzu brings us into the present moment with this quote. Do you have the patience to wait until your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment, but not seeking, not expecting, is fully present and can welcome all things. When you're feeling impatient, think about this passage and trust in the moment. Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Okay, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Yvonne Talley. We're talking about her new book. It's called Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. And it's a toolkit, a workbook that's very practical, gives all kinds of examples, and offers practical solutions. We're talking about some of the traps we get caught up with and how easy it is to be in, as Yvonne calls them, unresourceful characteristics or ways of approach. And I love that. We're not really using all the resources that we have wisely, right? That we're in a way, we're squandering them. And so we need to have some solution to that. And in part two of the book, the solutions are laid out, right? You call it the toolbox, right? So talk about that. You've got the super solutions process. That sounds a little bit like some of the Byron Katie work, actually, about shifting what you think you know and turn it on its head, as you call it, flip the statement. But tell us about these five steps.
Yeah, this is really an example of where the mindfulness and the neurolinguistic training come in, because, again, it's so important, the mindfulness and almost the spirituality as well. So in this super solution process, it is a way of creating quick solutions, and don't we all want that? And what happens is so many times we get ourselves stuck in this story. And when I start working with a client, and I'll say to them, you know, as we begin, if I feel so you're drifting off into the past and into your story, I'm going to pull you back into the present so that we can really start to unwrap this and work forward rather than working backwards. So that's really what this solution is about. And it starts out with the direct thinking method, which is a way of activating your powerful and conscious thinking. And then there's the other technique that I incorporate into this, which is I call whittling. And that helps you to get really clear on what you want. So we get rid of all the extraneous stuff within a sentence, and so that our words really echo clearly what we are focusing on. And then another process that I call sensing meditation, and that's the meditative rehearsal for what we want. So the five steps are, first we state the problem, we make a quick statement, and we use four discovery questions to get that statement in process. And then we flip that statement, and that's where we turn that problem, as you said, on its head. We turn that problem into a solution statement. And we're using that whittling and that direct thinking to make that happen. And then the third step is where we spotlight it. We give life to the flip statement. The flip statement is the first draft of your new story, so to speak. And your flip statement is the title of that draft. So we use our intention and our attention to give a new narrative to the need want that we want, and we spotlight that by getting really clear on that again. And then we do that sensing meditation. And then we have what I call step number four, which is that sensing meditation, a mindful checkpoint. And we get really clear on it. We put all of our emotion and feelings into exactly what we want to create as though it's happening in the moment. And that last step is, what is the outcome? What do I want? What am I bringing in? And we flip it into the goal. The outcome is what we will bring into our life that is aligned with desire, need, and want. So it's a pretty fast way to do it. And once you, and it's like anything, it takes practice. This idea of sensing meditation is really a form of guided self-meditation. And people who have kind of dampened down their ability to use their imagination in a positive way. You know, we use our imagination day in, day out, all day long. What if this happens? What if he does this? What if that comes into my life? And what I teach people to do is to use that power of imagination to create that feeling within you that exactly what you want is happening in this very moment. And things begin to shift. That's when I say the magic really starts to take place. So that's the essential tool. That solution process is one of the two essential tools in the book, and the other one is the 3-minute meditation, and I call that meditation magic. So it's very important that we get a handle on those, because we can use them at anywhere, anytime, except I never, of course, want people to meditate with their eyes closed when they're driving or doing anything else, but being in a meditative state is very helpful.
Right. Well, you know, the wonder to this for me, and it fits in very well with the way we would look at it in Unity, is that the solution is right already there in the midst of the problem, right? You state that in the need or the problem or whatever, the challenge, and then you flip it. In other words, you see it from a different angle. It's not like you're saying, I wish I didn't have this and then I'd be happy. You're saying, I'm going to take what I have and work with it and see it from another perspective, right? So they nest together, the solution and the problem are one. And I think this is key to very creative living. You know, all the great scientists, all the great inventors, you know, came to the solution because they worked through all the various quote problems. They worked through what didn't work, you know, and until they found what did. And so it wasn't that all that was a waste. It was part of the process of reaching the solution. And I think sometimes we think, oh, if only I could get rid of this, you know, and then I'd be happy. Well, no, it's understanding what does it represent for you, right? How is it showing up? How are you misinterpreting it somehow and being stuck when you could be free? So that's powerful for me.
Yeah, that idea of how, you know, if I could just get rid of it, everything would be okay. And what ends up happening so many times, Paul, and I'm sure you've seen this in your work as well, that's where they stop. That's where we stop. If I could just get rid of it, if I could just get rid of it. And nothing ever defines the it, and nothing ever, what would that feel like if that, what would be in its place? How will you know when that's changed? How will you know? What will that feel and look like? So it's really helping people to get past that stuck space. And let's face it, habits, you know, we all have these unresourceful habits. Habits are designed so that the mind conserves energy. It's just like when we get in the car and we go to work in the morning. We don't even think about it. We end up there and we go, oh my goodness, I don't even remember my trip. But if we get in our car and there's a detour sign at the end of our block and we have to think about how we're going to drive to work, we are now in the present moment. So if we could use that simple concept of the detour, what kind of detour am I going to create? What shift and change am I going to bring into my life that will get me to where I want to go, that will help me feel the way that I want to feel? You know,
right.
It's like it, and we can use it in every aspect of our lives.
You know, mindfulness has become a buzzword. Everybody's using it these days, and I think it's great because I think it's a wonderful technique. And whether it's a Buddhist-based mindfulness or other kinds of mindfulness, Jon Kabat-Zinn did some wonderful work, you know, with his books and the practical effects, the proven effects of mindfulness on patients, etc. But I want to ask you, when we use the word mindfulness, what do you mean by that? How would you characterize it?
Yes, mindfulness is just being aware of your body, the space you're in, your environment. That's it, in that moment. Just attuning to that very moment and not getting wrapped up in the past, you know, ruminating about the past or worrying about the future. It's in the moment, and it's in very difficult, if not impossible, for us to all stay mindful all of the time. But again, it is a practice. And I think when we're faced with conflict or challenge, being able to be in a mindful state is very important for how we're going to handle that situation that's in front of us. So for me, mindfulness is being aware in that moment of my body, my mind, my environment. That's it. And then from that mindfulness, I expand that out further. How can I take that attention, combine it with the intention, and create a new story, if you will, a new, and we do this again in guided meditation, a new reference point for me to attune to pay attention to. That's going to help me to be mindful in an expanded way. So yes, Jon Kabat-Zinn was definitely the father of all of this, and we know now, you know, mindfulness, one of the practices is meditation. We know that it has vastly improved our ability to focus and problem solve. It boosts the immune system. It decreases the cortisol that's brought on by stress and anxiety. So there's functionally, and also gives us that increase of dopamine, which improves our focus and concentration as well. So we know that there's some real functional aspects to being mindful that help us. It also, it can be a spiritual sense as well, that it helps us expand out and grow and attract that energy, create that energy, I believe, that, again, helps us move in the direction, in the way that we desire.
Right. Yeah, and the cool thing about mindfulness, I think, is, you know, when you're aware of not being present, you are present. So even when in other words, it's greater than being perfect all the time. We can screw up, and as long as we're aware that we're noticing, oh yeah, here I go, I'm screwing up, then the awareness is still there, right? So there's always that witness that even in the good times when we feel like in the flow, that's great. But even when we're not in the flow and we notice that, then that's the same awareness. That's the same mindfulness. So it counteracts this idea that, my humanness has to be perfect. You can still screw up. You know, you could still lose it. But as long as you notice what you're doing and you have an attention to that, then you can move through that quickly, you know, and rather than be lost in it. So I find it very helpful in that regard. And it sort of short circuits my human need to get it all right all the time, you know, be the perfect little spiritual being, you know, which is which is ridiculous anyway, right?
Well, that's a really good point, too, and that idea that we are perfect. I always say there's only one thing perfect in this world, and that's a souffle. You have to really know how to make one to make it perfect. So perfection is not who we are as human beings. We're moving and we're constantly changing. And this idea of mindfulness, you know, again, we're looking for tools and ways that we can be in our life with more richness and more quality. And that idea of it being a practice, I believe, is so important. If we can look at that as a practice, it's the same thing with gratitude. Gratitude is a practice. That's what helps us to be happy, is to be grateful. And so it's attuning our attention and to this. And the more we practice it, when we do run off on the past and the future or whatever it might be, we bring ourselves back to it more quickly. Someone asked me, well, how has it changed your life? Well, for me, it is that when I go down that road, as all of us do as human beings, and start to think about things that are unresourceful or do things that are not beneficial to for my daily living or my big picture, I can bring myself back much more quickly. And okay, let's recenter. Let's take a minute, right, or 3 minutes or 40 minutes and recenter. And that's really the practice of mindfulness. And it's not something we do. It's a way of being, so that when chaos and uncertainty shows up, we have the practice instilled within us to know and to be in a space that we handle in a way that's going to continue to allow us to think clearly as much, probably more so, think clearly and come up with solutions and be in a mindful space.
You know, the only tragedy in this is that soufflés collapse, don't they?
Yeah, the minute you
so even the most perfect soufflé is going
to
deflate, you know. And we have
to
acknowledge that in life. But you know, using that metaphor, though, you know, it's okay. You know, the soufflé was meant to deflate. And, you know, there's times when you know even our greatest breakthroughs, our greatest joys, are going to be past, and we're into something else, and that's okay. You know, it's not about maintaining a certain way of being all the time. You know, there's a flow, there's a cycle and a richness to life. And there's times when, yeah, you know, I feel like I'm in the zone, and other times I'm a klutz, you know, but that's okay. You know, be like you said earlier, be easy on yourself. You know, it's part of the richness, the messiness, if you like, of being a human being. So
mm-hmm. Well, you know, that we talk about that in our relationships, and we look back on the relationships that we've created and cultivated over life, and the messiness that is, I don't even want to say messiness, just the ups and downs and the difficult, challenging times that we face within our relationships does not turn that relationship into a bad relationship. In fact, it allows it to grow and with great strength, or it can grow with great strength. And when we look back, you know, when we're sitting and gazing into one another's eyes, we have that appreciation for, you know what, we did that, we got through it together, and we did that. So there's a real sense of deep richness within us when we know that we can face our challenges and walk through them. They might not, you know, as we said, they might be messy, they might be ugly, but knowing that we can do that and walk through them to the other side. And again, this is, I think, what's missing so much with so many children now, the way that we're raising them, is that everybody's a winner. Not everybody's a winner, and we don't even need to use that word, but we do have that within our culture. It's okay not to win. It's all right. It's part of being in this lifetime. We're not always going to be happy. We're not always going to get what we want, but having mindfulness in our lives will allow us to shift out of that. It's a tool and a practice.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a bunch of solutions here. I'm going to read the list, and then there's a few that strike me. These are ways you can bust the busyness. Descheduling is one, coding your calendar, the healthy no, which we talked about a little earlier. Taming time, ways to do that, clearing out clutter, whatnot, counting your yesings. We'll come back to that in a minute. Flip your thinking, we talked about that. Setting healthy boundaries, we mentioned that earlier too. Mind your mantra, and rate the rush. Take five, turning off. So a couple, what do you mean by count your yesings?
Yeah, this was a big thing, and again, this goes back to where we kind of start to, you know, move and divide, is, if you will, for women and men, and that is the idea of always saying yes. So this became mm-hmm. something that really I saw a lot with many of my clients. So I had to kind of devise a way that would help them move from always saying yes to really, you know, what is it that I want to say yes to? What is it that I really want to bring into my life and spend more time doing? So there's some five different solution questions in the book, but basically counting your yesings is, it once you become aware of how many times you say yes a day to things that you hadn't planned on saying yes to, we can take this and make it a really simple practice. You can either put that on your phone, or you can pull a piece of scratch paper and count a one on it, and the next time you do it, a two. So at the end of the day, you can look at that and you can say, oh my gosh, I said yes to about 10 different things today that I had no intention. In fact, I didn't even want to do them, and they don't fit into my big picture or my priorities. So tomorrow, I am going to be aware that when I get to number 9, I'm going to stop saying yes. And then the next day when I get to number 8. So again, it's a solution, but it's a process. And it might sound almost silly to do this, but the number one thing that I've found when I've used this technique with clients is they've come back in. I remember one client walking into my office. She said, "I'm free. I'm finally free of saying yes. I had no idea that I was saying yes that many times a day, and that's why I was ending up being so busy, so frazzled, so frustrated and irritable, because I didn't give myself boundaries on this." And that simple technique, again, it's awareness. It's bringing in a solution that is simple to do and brings your awareness to a level that you can now start to create a new strategy for that. And that's where the healthy no comes in. So you can see how they work. They can work together.
And we're not condoning, by the way, people who are, you know, irresponsible, always saying no and being unhelpful in the workplace or whatever. We're not talking about that kind of refusal to say yes. We're talking about when we're overcommitting, right? Because there are individuals, unfortunately, you know, maybe they're a little bit dysfunctional, you know, make it difficult for others because they never want to go along with the plan or whatever. And we're not condoning that behavior either. No, I mean, I think
no,
I want to make that clear.
Not. Yeah, and really the base of again, it's a boundary. You know, I always one of the things I always share is that to be of service, to be of community, to be of kindness, lead with kindness and an open heart, and you can never be led the wrong way.
Yeah,
this
beautifully
idea of saying
put.
Healthy no is exactly it's a boundary.
The book ends with a chapter on refreshers and reminders, and there's 52 things that you can do here. And some of them will be very familiar, and others will be intriguing, I'm sure. Can we pull out a few? What are you got any favorites here?
I think the first one, I love the attitude, the adopt a latitude attitude. So when I first started my business years ago, we had a tagline, attitude is everything, and we hear that a lot now. But really, it's just noticing your mood instantaneously and shifting that mood into kind of a vacation mood, if you will. So if things are really strapped and crazy during the week, if you can shift your mood into how you feel when you're going to go on a vacation, and you might even structure a day. You can take a mental mini vacation and make that day maybe one day of a week, and it's going to help adjust not only your attitude, but it's also going to give you a different perspective. And you'll start to notice it's not only a mental refresher, you're going to start to notice that you're going to start focusing on different things. You'll become more productive, likely more positive and more prepared. And I love the one of being curious and inspired. You know, focus on honoring your time with curiosity and inspiration rather than frustration. And if even in a conversation, when we're having a conversation, somebody might say something that maybe isn't in alignment with what we believe. If you can look at that person and pause and ask them, "I'm curious about that." And be inspired to learn more rather than being confrontational. Of course, we see this a lot now happening quite a bit. So the reason why I put the 52 in there is because if you adopt a latitude of attitude, that's going to lead, actually going to help you lead your week. It's going to be something you're going to sprinkle your week with, if you will. And as simple as it sounds, you can adopt even the phrase, "I've adopted a latitude attitude this week. I'm going to have a vacation state of mind or a Friday state of mind. I'm going to be curious and inspired this week." And it becomes a little mantra that can help frame your week in a better, different way.
So Jimmy Buffett was right then, was he? You've got to turn on our Jimmy Buffett songs. But there is a wonderful, you know, shift that comes when we can imagine those things, you know, and choose to live from that context, because we all get so caught up in being serious all the time, don't we? And we can have fun. I think that's one of the 52 ways too. You know, it always breaks the ice and it breaks the tension when you can have fun, you know, when you're not laughing at somebody's expense, but laughing with someone, you know, about the craziness of life or whatever. It's some of the one most wonderful moments I've had with my wife, I think, is when we've just spontaneously burst into laughter over some event, you know, that has happened. And there's nothing more intimate than that, I think, you know, because we're laughing at the human condition, but, you know, acknowledging, yeah, we're in this together and we're all in it together. And the other one I like to do is, have an adventure, you know, which is similar, I guess. And instead of framing a problem as, you know, something I don't want to do as a difficulty, I say I'm on an adventure. So it automatically shifts it for me in my mind. You know, I got to go to the doctor again. It's going to be an adventure.
Exactly.
You know, it lowers my blood pressure. It helps me, you know, if I see it in that regard. But otherwise, it can be counterproductive. So, you know, ways we can just shift our minds into living more creatively. We have 2 minutes left. If you had like 30 seconds to convey something really important to our listeners, Yvonne, what would it be?
I always say slow down and keep your big picture front and center. And if you can do one thing for yourself, just take that 3 minutes a day to meditate on what you want. Start to lead your life with an idea of could rather than should. And, you know, just allow yourself to gauge your involvement in your problems or distractions. Like, think about it. Is it important tomorrow, this week, in a month? And that will help you gauge that involvement even more. And, again, focus on what you desire to bring into your life, not trying to avoid what you're fearful of, but what you desire to bring into your life.
And this book, of course, is published by New World Library, but it's available in all the usual outlets. And
yep.
If you want to get in touch with Yvonne, it's very simple. It's Yvonne Talley, T-A-L-L-Y, YvonneTalley.com, right? And they can find all kinds of things about you at that website.
Yes, they can. And I also have an online workshop that will be starting soon, so they can join that as well.
Very good. Excellent. Folks, thanks for listening. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Yvonne. Next week, Michelle Fondin returns to the show. She's a meditation instructor, but this time she's going to talk about her new book. It's called Chakra Healing, so that should be fascinating. But right now, I want to thank Yvonne so much for being on today's show. Very practical advice, joyously put forward. So I'm so glad you could be with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure, Paul.
And folks, thanks for listening to this Voice of an Awakening World, tuning into world spirituality. Check my website out at pauljohnroach.com or go to my Facebook World Spirituality Facebook page and check that out too. Glad you're listening in to this show. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.